The following is a sneak peek of our latest bonus episode on our Patreon. For more great content like this, head on over to patreon.com/thesuperswitchclub. Link in the show notes. Today's a bonus episode on 2000's Sin and Punishment for the N64, originally only released in Japan, and recently ported over to the Nintendo Switch.
Hi, I'm Bill, and I absolutely love old video games, but I didn't have anyone to play with. So I decided to start the Super Switch Club.
That's right.
A podcast dedicated to discussing and reliving the nostalgia of retro video games that are also on the Nintendo Online Virtual Library.
G'day, it's Elise.
This is Ben from Dragoon Effect.
Hey folks, this is Brett from Skeleton House.
I am Douglas Gale, co-host of the Game Pass podcast, Game Pass.
This is Eric Slater from Epic Fails of History, Too Young for This Trek, and Podcasters Assemble.
Hey everyone, this is Caslo25.
What up everybody, this is Scott. I stream on Twitch.
And we're here for a special episode of the Super Switch Club.
I'm here to talk to you today about Sin and Punishment.
I'm here to talk about my little playthrough of Sin and Punishment.
The 2000 Japan exclusive N64 somewhat on-rail shooter.
Sin and Punishment.
Sin and Punishment.
That title's actually pretty accurate.
Sort of.
A game that I nominated for the N64 season.
For the Super Switch Club.
Anyway, I started blasting. Bang! Wow. Bang! Well, I don't see so good, so I missed. Then they ran away. I ran after them.
Okay.
Bang! Try to shoot them in the back. But I don't want so good either. Anyway, you guys all think I'm a hero, and I'll accept that responsibility.
Well, this was a first for me.
Okay, I'm only supposed to talk about this game for like 15 minutes, and it's only like 75 minutes to an hour and a half long, maybe. But I feel like describing it would take probably 2 hours, so I'll have to cut some stuff short.
First off, thank you, voters. You made a really good choice in Banjo-Kazooie, a game I'd never played before and was actually pretty fun, unlike my experience with Sin and Punishment.
So yeah, I figured this would be a short game, and I had no idea just how short.
I noped out halfway through the tutorial, but I did force myself to finish the tutorial.
I started off at the tutorial, and holy crap. This shit is hard.
I played the introductory level and some of the first level before I just didn't want to play anymore.
I have never really liked shooter games.
I've always been vaguely interested in this game because it is like a Nintendo published title.
Maybe it's because I'm Australian and guns are incredibly foreign to me. Or maybe it's just that I prefer more adventurous games and less shoot anything that moves.
What the f***? What is this game?
And it is bonkers.
If I'm not mistaken, this game was originally only released in Japan on the N64.
You know, it never came to America until the Virtual Console days.
But it was later on the Wii?
I think it was the Wii, when Nintendo started releasing their Japanese games on that platform.
It probably would have been fine to play, but I just had no desire.
And I've always been interested because, you know, Saki Amamiya, the main character, is an Assist trophy in Smash Bros. So I just always thought it looked kind of cool.
The game is, I guess, an on-the-rails shooter.
Also, this is a rail shooter. That's insanely new to me as well.
You have a character named Saki, who I think is just a professional anime character who shoots what I think are aliens, but at one point they're referred to as armed volunteers, so could very well just be out there murdering other humans who are doing things that we don't like for whatever reason.
Kind of like a cross between Star Fox and Space Harrier. Except in Space Harrier, you can move all around the screen because you fly.
And I think it was actually my nomination for the main season of the Super Switch Club. Of course, Banjo-Kazooie won. So, I mean, if another game had to win, then sure, why not that one?
What was I saying about this game? I don't know, it's an on-the-rails shooter.
In this game, your character's just on the ground, and you can jump over things like logs that you come across and other stuff.
Again, I have no idea what's going on, who I'm supposed to be shooting at, or more importantly, why.
But I don't think I was quite prepared for just how strange this game really is.
You start in a forest and your character is kind of running forward without actually moving forward, so the screen's coming at you.
But it doesn't matter since most of the game is just your character running around and you shooting a whole bunch of enemies.
And you just shoot a whole bunch of stuff. For no apparent reason?
You're shooting probably other humans.
Hooray!
I'm still not sure if we're the good guys or not.
But I'm just gonna assume I'm one of the good guys fighting an evil fascist totalitarian dictatorship of robotic centipedes and their endless legions of polymorphic dragon creatures.
There seems to be, like, lots of robots and stuff that come at you.
Anyway, I started blasting. Bah! Wow. Bah!
And you do that for a while, and eventually you beat the introductory level.
It's fun. I had fun shooting a bunch of bugs.
I had a crack at it for about 16 minutes one night and decided that it was really not for me and thought I wouldn't pick it up again.
But the gameplay is just that, that you're moving side to side. You can jump up and down. You can aim your little thing and shoot people.
I started blasting. Bam!
You have a sword also, which is the same as shooting just when someone's close. It's the same button is what I mean.
It's just, I don't know. There's not a lot to talk about. It's just like a rail shooter.
Now, this game is a little bit infamous because of its very strange control scheme.
Getting my head around the controls took a fair bit to get used to.
Okay, so first gameplay, we do the tutorial, and in the tutorial, you learn two things about the controls.
These controls make no goddamn sense.
You learn the controls, and you also learn that the controls are really f***ed up.
It's just a nightmare.
And things are just happening way too fast for my cerebral cortex to even register it.
I don't... What? Why would you have the left and... Oh, it's the one stick problem. I keep forgetting this.
So think about playing most N64 games. Like, it has the Alien 3-pronged controller, but for probably like 90% of them, your left hand is on the one with the analog stick, your right hand is on the one with the A, B, and the C buttons.
And I'm going to try to explain things as if I'm looking at a Nintendo Switch Pro controller. But you can probably associate what it would look like on an N64 controller.
I am using my N64 Switch controller.
I didn't have a Nintendo 64.
The controller that is intended for this N64 game.
But you aim your reticle using the joystick, which is pretty common. And then the what would be the Z button on the N64 controller, which is just the normal LR buttons on a Pro controller, allows your character to jump. And you can perform a double jump by hitting it twice.
And I want the joystick to be the character control, not my aiming control. So that took a fair bit to get used to too. But I did get the hang of it mostly.
And then you shoot by using your normal trigger button. So that's like ZL and ZR.
I have very limited experience with some of these older consoles. So I guess they had a single stick and they chose to make that the one that aimed the gun. So the moving was the buttons.
Because the game was designed so you could hold it either left-handed or right-handed. Moving your hands to the left side if you're left-handed and to the right side if you're right-handed.
Except on the Pro controller, they're in a, like a diamond shape. Sort of, you know what I mean? They're not like square.
There'll be like, you know, the occasional game where your left hand is on the one with the D-pad and your right hand is on the one with the buttons. But Sin and Punishment, the people at Treasure thought, hey, what if we did a game where your left hand was on the D-pad and your right hand was on the analog stick?
Oh, and it turns out that part of the reason the controls are so weird is because they designed this game to use the left side of the N64 controller as opposed to the right side, which is the case for literally every other game for this system ever.
So the left and right are not like the left and right position buttons.
Then you move left and right using either the Y and A button, which I think would be the C buttons on the N64 controller, or left and right on the D-pad.
It's like left and right are the left button and the top button. And then you've got to use your triggers.
And that's the general controls.
They're not modern controls. And at the time, the N64 just seems to be a controller designed by a f***ing lunatic. Probably not one person. This is 100 people who all got to say one little thing they wanted to have in a controller, and that's how you wind up with the N64. I don't know, maybe it was groundbreaking. Who knows? It's just, it's a f***ing huge pain in the ass to play games that were designed for it.
Again, I'm not sure who to blame here. The game developers, or whoever the f***ing Nintendo thought having a three-handed controller was a good idea.
Which seems like a pretty cool idea, and unfortunately translates to modern controllers not very well. Because your right stick will be move, and your left stick will be aim, which is like the opposite of every game that has ever existed.
Maybe, again, it's because I'm an Aussie and everything is backwards to me, but I want my aiming controls to be inverted.
Looking at the Wikipedia entry for this game, one thing I thought that was kind of interesting, it shows someone holding the N64 controller, and basically the center prong is in the left hand, and the right hand is on the right handle. So the left handle is just left to its own left. Left handle is left to its own devices. Just out there waiting for you to I guess, jump over with your left hand to hit the D-pad.
I wondered if this was just a me thing, and I asked my husband to give it a go. So handed him the controller and set up the tutorial and just told me what he thought. He said, no, that all moved how he wanted it to move. My husband is American. Cool. So it is just me.
And this says that this was holding the controller with the right two grips was popularized by Super Mario 64. And they're calling it the standard way to hold the N64 controller. Fine. That may be true. I have no idea.
I can't imagine playing this with a Nintendo 64 controller.
So thankfully, in the format in which I'm playing this video game, I was able to easily remap the controls so the sticks did the correct stick things.
What's interesting is it says that the developers of Sin and Punishment wanted to develop a game where the player held the left two grips. So it does make me wonder, is some of the barrier to entry here on the control? Because even in its time, Sin and Punishment was not a standard control scheme for what was accepted. Like, you have a bullshit controller that's already a barrier to entry, and now you have someone saying, like, let's make a game that uses it differently than other games. This is wild speculation on my part, but I was just wondering if that was the case.
And for most of the game, it's really a struggle to get used to them.
But then after testing my Aussie-American upside-down controls theory, I thought I'd try it again.
But once you do, the game actually gets super fun. I'll talk about that a little bit more as we talk about the individual stages. So let's jump right into the game.
Let's just do this chronologically. Okay, first thing, we see the demo screen, the attract screen.
And I will try to explain the story the best that I can.
From what I can see online, I did a little bit of reading about Sin and Punishment. The story sounds batshit insane.
This story, it goes places.
Originally playing it through, I did not understand what was going on at all.
Funny story. I started playing this in handheld mode before bed with the sound all the way down. So lo and behold, I had no freaking idea what was going on.
I don't know. Jesus Christ.
And apparently the plot barely explains itself. There are voiced cutscenes, which is pretty rare for the Nintendo 64.
The cutscene has subtitles entirely in a foreign language that I don't know the characters of.
Because it turns out, even though there's an English dub, all the subs are in Japanese.
I assume it's Japanese, but I'm not sure.
My kanji is a little rusty, so I guess I should probably get back to my Duolingo studies.
But the audio balancing is so bad that you can't even like really hear what they're saying half the time. And it kind of throws you like into the middle of things without explaining what the hell's going on.
So I don't know what was happening in the story.
But wow, this game is out there.
It makes me wish that the game either was a genre that I enjoyed and therefore could fight through what I would consider to be just limited control. I don't want to say bad controls. They're bad controls.
I was later told that the voice acting is in English, but I play games mostly on mute.
Anywho, even when I went back to watch the intro with the sound on, I was just as baffled.
It was so bizarre.
So yeah, if the game itself was something I liked, I would fight through the bizarre control scheme.
What is even happening in this game?
So I had to look up on the fandom wiki to get a really good storyline breakdown.
Because I like to play games either while watching a TV show or watching something with my wife, or over my lunch break on my Steam Deck or Switch.
I'm not entirely sure what the story is, who these characters are, what their motivations are, how the rules of this world work, or even what the stakes are.
Or if the controls, if this was a two thumbstick game where you could move your reticule with one thumbstick and then move side to side with the other, I would play this despite it being a boring on the rail shooter just because the story sounds crazy.
The story begins at 3:30 a.m. on July 15th, 2007, with someone calling out for Archie and then being murdered in cold blood.
Archie! Archie! Hurry! Save us, Archie!
And the screen turns red.
There's something going on with some rebels fighting against what I can only assume is a mutant cyborg bug army, I think.
And I really like crazy story in a video game.
This opening is so freaking weird and disturbing.
And it plays a bit of a prologue cutscene where we see some guy shoot up a bunch of rebels, and then this little girl who will become very important has like a telekinetic vision of the guy shooting up all the rebels.
Apparently there was one group, and now they have no strength to resist any longer.
Are these the rebels?
One group of them, sir. They have no strength to resist any longer.
But the leaders are still alive. There's no time now. Join the troops intercepting the ruffians.
The leaders seem to have gotten away, and the army-looking dudes are going to intercept the ruffians.
I think we're seeing a POV shot of someone getting taken out by a firing squad next to an alarm clock.
Then what appears to be some kind of army troop is standing around asking if the mass murdered people that surrounds them are the rebels.
And then we see a whole lot of dead bodies for some reason.
And then we see another guy telekinetically projecting his thoughts at some girl who is angry at a big cyborg dog.
Now there's some person on a roof and a set of hovering eyes telling them that Radahn is coming.
What the fuck is up with those creepy-ass eyes?
It's something unique about the art form, I feel like.
So you play as Saki and Iron in this game.
And depending on the stage, you play as either Saki or Iron.
We meet our main characters, Saki and Iron, talking to this telekinetic girl, and they're like, hey, we gotta go kill all these guys, I think.
Gotcha, listen. A ruffian swarm is approaching your position. I've also confirmed Radahn's location.
You don't get these kinds of stories in movies. Comic books sometimes come close.
And the person on the roof says she took what looks like a legendary Pokemon for herself, so she stole it.
They are like this rebel group.
Who are members of a defense force that is tasked with fighting these ruffians, as well as fighting the military, who seem to be oppressing the general populace of Japan.
Going up against the Japanese military?
Didn't I tell you? Make me the bait and Radahn will come to feast.
But I think it's like video games are made by people who make video games. They're not often, at least in this era, written by writers.
Radahn is jealous of me. I took you for myself.
I have chosen you.
The floating eyes have chosen her for himself.
There are these evil race of monsters called ruffians that were originally created to solve like a famine in the area.
And now there are moths flying around and we see another mass murdered scene, perhaps a large open grave.
This is our first big piece of lore. The game takes place in this kind of post-apocalyptic scenario where the world has been ravaged by famine, and to combat it, the world scientists came up with these genetically altered livestock that were raised in Japan.
But of course they went rogue and became evil monsters.
But then they start to mutate and turn into these monstrous things that are attacking everything called ruffians.
And then you also got like the Japanese military. I think they're called like the armed volunteers or something, who were, you know, created to fight against the ruffians, but instead they are also like suppressing the people, like Last of Us quarantine zone style.
Michiko's group, they've all been killed.
Achi, did you see them? Cold-blooded killers.
So the writing is not good.
And then we're in a room with a couple of people. I think one of them is a seer.
Even if we steal the damn transport, it won't mean anything if there's no one to ride in it. Black Siren, wake Saki.
Someone with a gun is complaining that there's no one to ride in their transport now, and they're hoping the soldier people hit the ruffians.
It's a lot of, like, what me and my friends would think was good writing from ourselves when we were in high school.
I don't fucking know, man.
And there's just something so delightful about that.
You put their faith in us. We must try to help the others.
That's only if the soldiers hit the ruffians like we expected.
Not expected. As I predicted. Now we'll have a good window.
There's also some chick who looks like if Lady Gaga as Harley Quinn in the Todd Phillips Joker sequel was turned into an anime and then pixelated into 64-bit graphics. Either that or a polygonal crack addict.
Saki, the main character, has been thrown a gun and told they have work to do.
Often, like, you know, a very expensive product to make that has just garbage trash writing.
Now, I know I'm a gun novice because Australia, but throwing guns inside seems like not a great idea.
So you go along, you're this rebel group, you're fighting against both factions, I guess you could say.
But anyway, I have no idea what's going on. At all.
It's one of those things that's so bizarre that you can't help but love it. Or at least that was the case for me.
It is, I don't know. I find that super delightful.
So no idea what the story was about.
What the fuck is up with those creepy ass eyes?
I don't know. Jesus Christ.
So if you're struggling to follow along, I'd go read that entry. It probably will clear up a ton of stuff.
Soon, it will all begin.
To listen to the rest of the episode, help support us on Patreon at patreon.com/thesuperswitchclub, where you can unlock tons of exclusive content, including, but not limited to, early access to new episodes, behind-the-scenes clips, blooper reels, and even a chance to vote on what we cover next on The Super Switch Club. Link in the show notes.
This has been a presentation
of the We Can Make This Work
Probably Network.
Follow us on Twitter
at Probably Work for more of our questionable content.
Also, we have a website called probablywork.com.
I had no idea what was going on here.
I don't fucking know, man.
I told you, I honestly had no clue what was going on when I was playing this.